Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Seems like we should be hearing something here.
Something happened there.
Well, this is what I thought was going to happen.
Oh, let the world stand still. The church bells ring. Silent night as the angels sing. Hallelujah.
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 That works. What a goosebump-filled opening of the show it might have been. This is a brand new song that was just released over the weekend. Carrie Underwood and John Legend. It is a cut from Carrie Underwood's first full collection of Christmas songs. I can't believe she hasn't had a Christmas album out. But I'm told that this is from her first collection. And it is one of the most beautiful songs that I've heard. This is going to become a Christmas classic, I promise you, called Hallelujah. Her new album is called The Gift. And you will be able to see it on the... Carrie Underwood's going to have a Christmas special December 3rd on HBO. So you'll be able to see it. But if you want to see this video, it's gorgeous, beautifully shot. And this song, I can't get enough of it. I can't stop listening to the song.
Do you know if John Legend will be on the show with her?
He is going to.
Yeah.
They're going to perform the song together.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'm in a Christmassy mood.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm usually not before Thanksgiving. I think because of what a weird year this has been.
To say the least,
that,
if not less.
I'm trying to bring on some of the holiday joy. I haven't decorated yet.
No, I haven't either.
And put my tree
Our
up.
Newsroom looks festive. The station looks festive.
We do have a very... We've got a lot of decorations all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Puts you in a good mood.
Puts you in a good mood, right?
Yeah, puts you in a good mood when you came in. I had, instead of the coffee that we have back in our lunchroom, the free coffee that tastes like dishwasher fluid.
No, it's not that bad.
It is pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
It helps me survive, I can tell you.
I got hot chocolate today instead. I thought it was more festive.
Nice. It tastes like dishwashing. You're soaking in it. Dishwashing liquid.
Madge.
Mild? More than just mild.
Do either of you have little mini marshmallows on you by any chance?
No. Left mine at home.
I have my instant oatmeal, but I don't
chocolate.
Have...
It's hot chocolate. I mean, considering it's the same coffee maker that makes the coffee that tastes like dishwater, the hot chocolate is good. It's tasty.
I'm going to try some.
Here, just listen. Mm.
Oh, I can taste it.
It's kind of creamy, even.
I can taste it. I'm going to try that now.
It's good.
Actually, one of those, that's a kind of a drink, though, that gums up your throat. So if you are speaking for a living or singing.
Like I'm about to do.
Or living, and you're on air, it can cause a potential clogging problem.
What do you mean? I'm going to be doing this all morning?
You'll be. I kind of implied that.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Ooh. Thank you, Ombudsman.
We missed you on Friday, Schwani.
Yeah, where were you?
I didn't even know you were doing it.
I filled in for Anna DeVlantis on Friday.
Yeah, now you tell me.
And we did, we had a nice show. We get a nice reaction on that show. We get very, very nice texts and emails, and people are very, very nice. But Andy was doing sports that day.
Mm-hmm.
So it was two-thirds of a Sunday morning crew here. Did we forget to tell you?
You did. And I think you did it on purpose.
Wait, was I supposed to tell him?
I was hoping you would forget.
Let's not tell Schwan. let's just kind of leave him out.
Yeah.
That's all right. I know when I'm not wanted.
Yeah, you were busy, probably.
I was.
What were you doing Friday between 1 and 4?
I don't remember.
He was that busy.
I don't remember. But
you don't remember.
You invited me
It was 2 days
time.
Ago. What do you mean you don't remember? What were you doing that you don't want to tell us?
I don't remember. I think
you don't want to tell us.
I was doing some sort of work.
I think you were doing something that you don't want everyone to know you were doing.
I was doing some sort of work.
Are you needle pointing again?
Oh, you gave it away.
Are you knitting a scarf for Christmas?
I was knitting a scarf for you for Christmas.
Are you needle pointing Christmas gifts for Andy and me?
I'm going to have to change the name on the scarf now.
It's going to be a facsimile of the three of us in needlepoint. he's making pillows with our faces on them in needlepoint.
We'll call it the Ombudsman.
Oh, that's sweet. That's so sweet.
Or we could say George, Mary, and Mr. Potter.
I thought of you yesterday because,
you didn't think about me on Friday.
You were busy with your needlepoint class.
Whatever you were doing.
I could have come in here and continued.
What do I heard those needlepoint classes are called when people get together and they needlepoint and gossip about people? Have you heard what they're called?
There is a name. You mean like Aunt B and Emma Watkins?
I mean like... Get together? No, they're actually called... I guess we could say this. They're called Stitch and Bitch.
Oh, nice.
I can say that.
Glad you said it.
That's what the classes are called. You sit around, you needlepoint, and you gossip about people. That's what Schwani was doing on Friday when Andy and I were here at work.
Working, exactly.
Our fingers to the bone. He's over there with the 100% acrylic yarn.
Well, did you hear what else he said? Well, I was told.
Yeah, Mrs. Kravitz Schwan over there.
And I heard.
So we've got a big show today. We've got Ron Howard on the show today.
Wow.
Ron Howard, who's directed a new movie that'll be out on Netflix in a week, I think. And also Glenn Close and also Amy Adams. But unlike Ron Howard, neither Amy Adams nor Glenn Close was Opie.
That is correct.
And you know that's the first thing I mentioned to him when I talked to him?
Like he's never heard that before.
I dropped an Opie reference to him the other when I was talking, because just the day before, I had seen an episode of Andy Griffith. I know you find it hard to believe. That's probably what Johnny really was doing.
I was studying.
Was watching Andy Griffith's show.
I'm working on a graduate course for...
It was a class where this medicine man came to Mayberry, and he sets up his truck on the main street.
Oh, right.
In front of the sheriff's office. And he's selling this miracle medicine. And Aunt B buys a bottle, and she takes it home and drinks it, and she gets smashed. It's booze. It's alcohol. It's like 170 proof alcohol. And Aunt B gets smashed, and she goes home and gets on the piano and starts singing Toot Toot Tootsie Goodbye with Opie.
And she spins around on the piano stool.
Toot Toot Tootsie Goodbye. And that's the first thing I mentioned. Ron Howard, an Academy Award-winning director, got a brand new serious movie out. That's the first thing I mentioned.
What was his reaction?
Oh, he loved it.
He laughed it. Good.
Completely remembered doing it. Talked about Frances Bavier, the actress who
played Aunt B.
Played Aunt B. So we're going to play that interview for you coming up later.
They invited him for dinner in that episode.
What do you mean?
The medicine man came to dinner that night.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fair lady, I have dined in some of the finest establishments in New Orleans, but never have I had a meal such as this.
Wow.
It's almost like we're there.
Wow. and I dare to ask, what was he doing on Friday?
And if Barney had not forgotten his hat in the closet, they would not have found
the elixir. All the bottles of booze up in the closet.
They would not have found the elixir.
Yep. She's, Andy, she's smashed.
Andy, exhibit A.
So anyway,
Ron, you brought it up.
I know.
You brought it up.
Ron Howard talking about Opie. talking about being Opie, because I'm sure.
I can't wait to hear this now.
Because he can't get enough of somebody bringing that up every single day of his life.
Last
60 years. and also Amy Adams and Glenn Close, who star in his new movie that's called Hillbilly Elegy. We've got the Butterball Turkey Talk Line gentlemen coming up later on to help you get ready for Thanksgiving. We've got Dr. Kevin Most and also our far-flung forecast. And speaking of Andy Griffith, time once again for America's favorite feature, the award-winning far-flung forecast, a fascinating compendium of interesting facts each week presented to us by your charming host, Dave Tootsie Schwann.
There was also another song she enjoyed singing on there. Chinatown. Chinatown, my Chinatown, when the lights are low. You were saying?
Nothing. I'm just enjoying the entertainment.
Well, thank you
very
much.
I feel like I put a quarter in, but I didn't.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that.
Kind of out of nowhere.
You're very kind today. Thank you for your introduction. And today, our far-flung forecast takes us to Newport, New Hampshire.
Newport, New Hampshire.
About 40 miles outside of Concord, the capital of New Hampshire.
Okay.
Population 6,507.
Huh.
Goes back to 1753 and incorporated as Newport, named for Henry Newport, a distinguished scholar, soldier, and statesman from England. But we bring up Newport, New Hampshire because it is also the home and birthplace of a really remarkable woman from the 19th century, Sarah Josepha Hale.
Hmm.
Does anybody know who Sarah Josepha Hale
Sarah
is?
Sarah Josepha
Hale. Anybody?
Hmm.
Bueller? Anybody? Nobody. Sarah Josepha Hale.
What have you been drinking?
I was going to say, I got to go sniff his coffee.
It's just that coffee that you were talking about.
Peppermint schnapps and hot chocolate.
Yeah.
It was that elixir that Aunt B was drinking. But Sarah Josepha Hale was a writer and an activist and one of the first editors of magazines and publications in the United States. She also authored the nursery rhyme Mary Had a Little Lamb.
No.
Hmm.
But she also wrote a letter to President Abraham Lincoln in 1863 asking the president if he would consider a national holiday of Thanksgiving. Now, this was on the president's mind and had been for some time, and a push for a national Thanksgiving holiday had gone back a number of years, but she wrote a letter encouraging Abraham Lincoln to make an immediate proclamation recognizing Thanksgiving as a national holiday.
How about that?
And he did. On October 3rd, 1863, proclaimed in the midst of a civil war, we need to pause and take some time for gratitude. And by the way, in 1863, Thanksgiving fell on November 26th, just like it does this year.
Hmm.
So Newport, New Hampshire, the home to Sarah Josepha Hale, and they are having cloudy skies and 28 degrees today. It's a little chilly up there.
We could have the similar message of call for unity during the strife that America's in right now.
Oh, absolutely.
As well.
Yeah. Yep.
Today is, I wanted to also mention, is a anniversary, something that happened 57 years ago today in Dallas, Texas.
Here is a bulletin from CBS News. In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
Then it was back to the soap opera. but not for long.
Walter Cronkite with the bulletin of what's going on. They interrupted Days of Our Lives and then went back to Walter.
This picture has just been transmitted by wire. It is a picture taken just a moment or two before the incident. If you can zoom in with that camera, we can get a closer look at this picture.
And almost exactly 1 hour after his initial bulletin, this now famous announcement.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
Walter Cronkite clearly shaken in delivering the bulletin, for which many of us remember exactly where we were, exactly what we were doing when the shocking news took place that President Kennedy had been shot in a motorcade just outside of Daley Plaza in Dallas, Texas. Have you ever been there, Schwann? You've been to so many historic places.
Just once. I was there right after high school graduation, long before they put the sixth floor museum up there. But was there and drove by Daley Plaza, and there was just a plaque at the point in which the shots were fired. Yeah. I also recall, if you looked up at the sixth floor window of the school book depository building, in that corner window was a black X there. And that's really all of the recognition that was there. That was 1974 at the time.
Yeah,
but I've not been to the museum.
Yeah, I've been to the museum. I've been there several times. I found it fascinating. And because we've heard so many conspiracy theories about what may or may not have happened that day, I walked all over the plaza, and now I presume it's still going on. But when I was there a few years ago, conspiracy theorists are parked out, you know, with their folding tables outside, trying to, you know, sell you literature and souvenirs and the such. But it's pretty creepy. It's pretty creepy.
It would be chilling for me to walk in there. You know, just to be on that floor and see where, you know, the window was. They have it kind of made up the way in which
set up
police
with
found it.
Yeah, empty boxes. Boxes supposedly where Oswald, positioned his rifle and so forth. It's pretty creepy to see it, but
yeah,
it's fascinating. It's just fascinating to see it all. And it was November 22nd, 1963, so we remember that anniversary today as well. All right.
Do you remember where you were? Can you?
Playground.
Me too.
Playground.
It was afternoon recess.
Edward Cole School on the south side of Chicago.
Yeah.
I think we were either just going out or just coming in. And, the word, how old was I? I was just in second or third grade or something like that. You know, I didn't completely understand, but that something very bad had happened. And they wheeled the TV sets into the rooms so we could watch, history, watch the news of what was going on. And then you pretty much spent the next few days just watching television.
Exactly. And watching, that's all you did.
Watching the coverage, watching little John salute the casket, watching the riderless carriage. The Jack Ruby shooting
Oswald. That was live.
Shooting Oswald.
That was
live. Yeah, we watched that. We saw that. We had the whole thing on, all in beautiful black and white.
Right, right.
Because we didn't get a color TV in our house till 2010. So. We were a little slow.
I still don't have one.
Slow on that. That's why you like Andy Griffin. 9:38, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Time for our weekly visit with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Good morning to you, my friend.
Good morning, Dean. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Last night, the word comes out that the Food and Drug Administration has granted emergency authorization for Regeneron, which is the antibody treatment that was given to President Trump right after he was diagnosed with COVID-19. What can you tell us about Regeneron? Give us the full scoop on it.
Yeah, so it is exciting news because the treatment essentially is a monoclonal antibody. And what it has shown is that it really neutralizes the infection fairly quickly in many individuals. So will be very promising to see if this single dose medication will start to eliminate illness in a lot of people early on. We found that, you know, it apparently worked for the president, but it was a very small study. There were only about 45 people, I want to say, that were in it. But in that small study, it showed that it worked and worked well and worked safely. So very promising news. Just gives us one more bullet in our gun to help help us with this infection as we start to rely more on healthcare workers to provide more than just console to patients.
So this Regeneron, you said, is for people who are newly diagnosed. This is not for people who have had it for a while, who are maybe on ventilators and, you know, pretty severe with the symptoms of COVID-19.
Yeah. So we really want to make sure that we're getting the people that potentially will get to the point of being very severe. So we really want to make sure that we use that on the appropriate people, people that get the illness, are at high risk or at high vulnerability, but early on, versus the ones that are already much more ill on ventilators. You've missed your window of opportunity at that point.
So if it's good for people who are newly diagnosed, is it also effective for people who might be in high-risk groups or people who are exposed and have not tested positive yet? Is it something that could be preventative?
Potentially, if we had enough supply of it, because when you look at people who have been exposed, our exposure numbers are so high right now, we would run through this. So really, the goal is going to be identify those individuals and get them that treatment as early on as possible to prevent them from needing to be in the hospital. So we will start giving it in the IV, you know, very soon as an outpatient. So we'll bring the patients safely into the hospital in a way that they don't interact with other patients or minimal staff. We'll give them that medication. We'll watch them for an hour, and then they will be discharged. So the goal is to try to stop those individuals from needing further, more intense hospitalization services.
Okay, and this is Eli Lilly, I believe, right, that is going to manufacture this, and they're saying that they will only have 80,000 doses of this by the end of November, and then by the first week of January, 200,000, and then at the end of January, 300,000. So they're just ramping it up like crazy.
Correct. So if you look at Lilly, that, you know, is a very big powerhouse to be able to make it as much as they possibly can. But just listening to the numbers that you just had right there, you hear about the positivity, new positivity rates, you hear about the hospitalizations, and you can see how those numbers dwarf the supply number that's going to be available for a little while here.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the emergency authorization for this, did it go through the usual testing process? I mean, a vaccine is taking such a long time. This seems like it went through right away.
It went through a lot quicker, which is kind of interesting. We know that antibody studies and antibody medications have worked well in the past. So we use them for rheumatoid arthritis. We use them for lupus. So the FDA said this is not a new novel drug. This is just a new kind of a portion of what we've already used in the past. So I think that they're much more lenient in some of the studies. Not to saying it's unsafe, because like I said, it's an antibody, so it's not like it's a medication, it's a chemical we're giving people and we don't know how it's going to react. We just wanted to make sure that it was effective, and it certainly looked like it is, and it's shown that give it early, you can prevent things going south later. So that's probably the biggest news, is the doctors will see these patients and say, wait, you have diabetes and heart disease, you just tested positive, I am going to put you up for the antibody test, or excuse me, for the antibody treatment.
And did you say this Regeneron is used for lupus and arthritis, et cetera? Or is that something else you were talking about?
No, not this drug specifically. But we use antibody drugs already.
For other things. Okay.
Correct.
I got it. So my point was, if this is going to be used for COVID-19, what happens to the people who have lupus and other people who depend on these drugs, you know, for their daily lives? Are they suddenly without?
Well, you make a very good point there, because if you think about drug companies, it's not like we have extra factories sitting around and people not doing anything. So certainly all those medications are being made, and you would hope that there's a stockpile of them so it doesn't impact Eli Lilly's opportunities to make this medication. But, you know, I'm sure that Eli Lilly probably isn't running their machines 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so they probably have ramped up quite a bit just for this.
Yeah. What's the latest on all the other vaccines? We've had a lot of news this week about vaccines that seem like they are in excess of 90% effective. What's your take on where we are with all of this?
Yeah, I think the vaccine story is probably the one that's the most fascinating. You know, Pfizer put in for their EUA on November 20th. The advisory committee is already looking at that information, and they will meet on December 10th. They'll make a decision and send it to the FDA on the 11th. The 12th, it'll go to the CDC. And theoretically, the distribution would happen on December 13th, and we would be vaccinating people on December 14th. So that first wave with Pfizer would happen December 14th. Moderna, just a little bit behind them. If you remember, they slowed for a little bit. So they are going to put in for their EUA sometime very early in December. And then you have AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson right behind them. We're just waiting for those results to see if they are as good as the Pfizer and Moderna. But when you're talking about an effective rate of 95%, we have to remember the CDC was willing to accept a vaccine with somewhere between 50 and 60% effective.
Yeah.
So at 95%, that's just amazing.
Yeah. With the kind of numbers that we're looking at right now and what we're expecting through the holidays, you know, Thanksgiving in particular, but even if this goes through Christmas, at times of year when people normally get together for Thanksgiving dinner, get together for holiday parties, get together for Christmas, for Hanukkah, for Kwanzaa, for, you know, a variety of celebrations, we could be looking at numbers, COVID-19 positivity numbers, exploding. So this really couldn't happen at a better time, I guess, right?
Well, I think it's good and bad. I think what happens now is people say, oh, there's going to be a vaccine, so now I don't have to worry. They take their guard down. So we have to make sure that people understand that the hospitals are really getting stressed right now. The healthcare providers are really getting stressed. And although that light at the end of the tunnel may be just a few months away, we have to realize that that first round of doses is all going to go to first responders, healthcare workers, nursing home staff to protect the vulnerable people. We probably won't see a widespread vaccination program probably until May or June, at which time we may have up to four or five different companies making the vaccine.
9:51 now. Ron Howard, Amy Adams, Glenn Close. My A-list interviews are coming up later in the program today. Dr. Kevin Most, our medical A-lister, answering questions about COVID-19, Central DuPage Hospital. What is a Dr. Most Thanksgiving going to be like this year?
Dean, it's totally different than how it's been in the past. You know, I think I've shared with you that I used to host Thanksgiving, and with all my family, extended family, we would have close to 20 people there. And we would probably get as many people as we could around that dining room table, which came to about 10 or 12 people. You know, those days are gone.
Did you sit at the kids' table?
I sat at the kids' table, absolutely. At least I could have a conversation. In the adult table, I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, you can't get a word in edgewise with the grown-ups anyway.
Yeah, but this year it's going to be different. We're all going to be celebrating, you know, at our homes, and we'll do a Zoom call or a conference call and, you know, share what we're thankful for. But, you know, my mother is, you know, in the high 80s. We certainly don't want to get exposed to her. My sister will be undergoing treatment for colon cancer. We don't want to certainly get her ill again, you know. And when you get a large group, if you get 20 people together, chances are there's going to be some asymptomatic person in that group,
right?
You know, as well as we all try to avoid it.
Is there a way to put a number on it and say, don't have more than X number of people for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, you know, if I was going to do it, I would say no more than six. And as long as half of those were people that you really knew well and were kind of already in your pod. And then the other thing I say, Dean, to people that are going to do it, say, hey, we are going to do this. Don't do your typical Thanksgiving meal where you're sitting at the table for a long period of time. Try to spread out as much as you can. If the weather is okay, open the windows, get the air circulating, make sure people are washing their hands frequently, and wear a mask. You can talk through a mask. You just really want to be as safe as we can, because this is one day we need to, one weekend actually, that we need to get over, or we're going to have that stress on that in the hospital system through May, or excuse me, through December and through the winter holidays.
Yeah, which we cannot afford. What about serving the food, even with small groups? Passing platters around doesn't seem safe. Setting up a buffet and having people going up to the buffet doesn't seem safe. What do you recommend for that?
Yeah, well, we have shown that not a lot of touching contact. Again, if as long as your hands are clean and you're washing your hands, that's great. You know, remember, Grandma would always tell you, all right, kids, go wash your hands before we have dinner. Same should be for Thanksgiving. If everybody washes their hands, you know, well before or just before Thanksgiving meal, then passing around is okay, because you've already proven that your hands are clean. Now, that being said, we know that the vast majority of these are going to be transmitted by air. So you usually at Thanksgiving will have loud conversations, right? You'll try to get a word in and you'll talk a little louder.
Packed That's around the table, across from each other. You know, very few tables are 6 feet long or wide. To provide the correct amount of distancing. This is Rick at 312-981-7200. You're on with Dr. Most.
Yeah, Dr. Most, I have a couple questions about the effectiveness of the different vaccines. You know, they're saying some that had to be, some are 95%, some are 90. One has to be kept really, really cold, and one is, you know, doesn't have to be kept. Now, when these do come out, can you actually pick and choose which one you want, and how will that go?
Great questions, Rick. So the logistics of delivering the vaccine is something that you just touched on and is a big concern for us. So the Pfizer vaccine has to be delivered at minus 70 and kept at minus 70 until it's thawed. And then we have, I want to say, 28 days to use it. Whereas the Moderna vaccine can be just kept in a regular freezer. So those are just the nuances of the vaccine. Will we have to pick? Will we pick and choose? You will probably be able to pick and choose eventually. Early on, it's going to be, here's the one that we have.
What's available, yeah.
Correct. If you get Pfizer for your first vaccine, the 21-day to 28-day later, you have to get Pfizer again. You can't go, oh, I'm going to get the Moderna one. No, they have to be the exact same vaccine. The effective rate is, both of them tested right at 95%, which is phenomenal in the history of vaccines.
This is Carol. You're on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most.
Good morning. I'm honored to speak with you. My question is, when you do get the vaccine, how can you identify yourself, or how are you going to be identified? You're going to stop wearing a mask, I would think, and people are going to go, hey, you don't have a mask on. Vaccine.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Yep, Carol, you hit it right on the head. Is this going to be the scarlet letter that we're going to wear around saying that we have this? Are we going to have some identification that shows that? It may get to that point, but really early on, we're going to be protecting those healthcare workers. But as we start to roll this out, we are going to be testing for what we call herd immunity. And when we hit a certain percentage, then we'll really start to say, are masks really necessary from that point going forward, whether you got vaccinated or not? The goal is going to be to get 70% of the United States vaccinated. That, along with the individuals who have already been infected, will get us close to that herd immunity number so that we're all protected regardless of whether we've been vaccinated or not.
Yeah, I was talking about this with somebody. Even once I get vaccinated, I sort of want to keep my mask on. I feel safer from the flu, from getting a cold from somebody. I see it as, you know, being kind of a new normal.
Dean, it may be. And if you look at what happened with flu last year, because of masking, because of distancing, we had a low flu year. which would be ideal this year since we're stressed as much as we are right now with COVID. So will this become our new norm? It may, and time will tell. But I still think we're all going to be much more aware of infectious diseases now than we ever have been in the past, obviously.
Anyone who's been around me knows I've been wearing a beekeeper suit since last April, just to be on the safe side anyway. Kevin, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. Thank you again for all the great information. All the best to you, to your family. I hope you have a great holiday. Thank you so much.
Thanks, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to at least share what I feel and what I see going on here. I think it's important as we enter this holiday, and Thanksgiving to all of your listeners as well. We appreciate them.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you every week. Thank you. Richard, Sunday morning, WGN. Ron Howard, Amy Adams, Glenn Close. My A-list interviews today coming up in about a half an hour. But I wanted to tell you about some things going on in Chicago of which you can partake. One of them is a virtual concert that will take place on November the 28th called Glory. Music for Our World Virtual Concert. It's going to be put on by the Apollo Chorus. Stephen Alltop is the musical director and conductor of the Apollo Chorus. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the show, Stephen.
Good morning, Dean. How are you?
Very, very well. So a little different this year. I mean, you know, you, like everything else in the world, had to readjust, right?
Yes, like everything else in the world. Well, of course, the Apollo Chorus has been making music in Chicago for 149 years, and we wanted to continue that tradition safely and also relevantly. So we have assembled a full virtual concert about music for this time. And the program ranges from pieces about connecting with nature, which I think a lot of people have had a chance to do. That's probably a nice thing. And certainly music about social justice and about the need for unity and equality. And it's really going to be a very powerful program.
Your performances through the years have been powerful and very moving and in person. I'm wondering how you're going to do all of this virtually.
Well, the virtual process involves a lot of preparation. I have to do things like make reference recordings for the singers to ultimately record to and rehearse with and learn their parts with. We had Zoom rehearsals every Monday night like normal, very well-structured and regimented rehearsals to help people be prepared. And it's surprising how much you can convey over Zoom. You can't make music simultaneously, of course, but you can get a lot done that way. And then I would make conducting videos that they would follow with my reference recording. So they're actually recording to a video of me conducting them. So there's more nuance included there. And then it becomes, once we have all their video and audio recordings, it just becomes an enormous production task. And we have something like 10 different people and professional groups, and myself and my assistant conductors and everybody involved in assembling the different components. It's very much a divide and conquer situation, but it's going to be great.
I can't imagine how meticulous that process must be to put together all of the basic tracks to which all of the singers record their parts individually, and then somebody has to put it all to sync it up and put it all together, right? I mean, that's
yes,
basically how it works.
That is exactly how it works, and it's remarkable just how much more time it takes in the virtual environment. But I will tell you, as I've started to see the finished products, the level of satisfaction and the way I've been moved is hard to put into words, because we have come together. And we're joined by members of the Chicago Community Chorus, a wonderful group conducted by my friend Keith Hampton in the final video, which I can only say will take people's breath away. It's a song called Unity.
Mm-hmm.
which I think we all need a lot of these days.
Yeah, yeah. I think we maybe have a little shortage of that right in the world right now.
That's right, why it's there.
Exactly. In the U.S. in particular, that's for sure.
Yes.
Well, I can't wait to hear it. I've been very moved by similar kind of virtual performances that I've seen. Not nearly the number of voices and complexity that it sounds like you're putting together. So I'm very much going to look forward to this. It's November the 28th, next Saturday, from 7 to 9 p.m.
It'll be at Saturday evening, the 28th, at 7 p.m. And people can get information at apollochorus.org. And I would just close by saying a lot of people have seen virtual choirs where you have sort of a wall of singers in squares. And while there's a bit of that, it's hard for me to describe how artistic some of these videos are. And we have a memorial to people lost in COVID-19 that just brought me to tears, because these people need to be seen, not just be statistics.
Right.
Their faces need to be seen, and they are in this video.
Yeah.
So
that's very powerful. I was on the radio the other day, and we were talking about COVID-19, much of the way that we've been talking about COVID-19 since the beginning of the pandemic. And, you know, it's become sort of routine now and very statistical and, you know, with numbers and, you know, this and that. And somebody called, a listener called and said, I don't mean to bring everybody down, but I'm just hoping that my story will move one person to wear a mask, one person to do something different. We just buried my brother. We just came from burying my brother.
Oh, no.
Which hit me like a ton of bricks. But there's the humanization that you're talking about, of that we want to see these people. We want to put faces on these people. We want to, we don't want to just make them part of a ever-growing number of people who are dying from this. We want to know who they were and what their stories were. That humanization is so important. So I'm so happy to hear that you all are going to be doing that as well.
Yes, my assistant conductor, one of my two assistant conductors, James Chang, had this project to take care of. And what James put together totally humanizes this pandemic, the diversity of people affected, the diversity of ages of people affected, and just to look in their faces and to know that everyone we've lost, but they were beautiful, beautiful people. And I shouldn't suggest that this video won't have its uplifting moments, because it will have incredibly uplifting and delightful moments. But, you know, we have lived through a range of emotions, haven't we?
Yeah, we sure have. Maybe more important than ever, but your shows, the Apollo Chorus of Chicago, have always been very moving and very much a part of the Chicago holiday, picture. And I was happy to hear that it was still going on. I'm very much looking forward to next Saturday night, November 28th, 7 to 9 p.m. Is it apollochorus.org? Is that what you said?
It is. It's apollochorus.org, and people can text 90206.
All right. Very good. Glory, Music for Our World virtual concert. It's great to talk to you. I hope you have a nice Thanksgiving, Stephen. Thank you, Stephen Alltop, the music director and conductor of the Apollo Chorus of Chicago. Thank you.
To you.
All right.
Thank you so much.
And you too. Thank you for joining us this week. I'm going to be cooking up a storm. Normally I cook on Wednesdays on the WGN-TV Morning News. This week, because of Thanksgiving, I'm cooking tomorrow. I'm doing some special side dishes and a very special roasted turkey breast brining. As we speak, it is brining in buttermilk for an amazing taste. I'm going to show you that tomorrow morning. Tuesday morning, some special Thanksgiving desserts I'm going to be doing. Wednesday, I've got some special surprises for you on that day as well. So make sure you're watching in the morning for all of that as well. With these cold temperatures outside, going to be spending more time inside your home. That's why you got to get those carpets, rugs, and upholstery cleaned. Get the virus and bacteria out of there. Time to professionally sanitize your carpeting, rugs, floors, and furniture. Call Executive Green Carpet Cleaning, a family of dedicated carpet cleaners taking every measure to ensure the health and safety of your family. Executive Green provides a level of clean that no one else can deliver. They scrub and extract using the world's most powerful carpet cleaning machines and their own ultra-purified deionized water. Plus, they scrub and groom your carpets to leave a nice, even-looking finish. Call now. Their schedule is filling up before the holidays. Caroline or Kelly will answer the phone when you call 630-990-8600. They're the only ones that will answer. 630-990-8600. Or you can book online at WGNclean.com. Get 3 rooms sparkling for just $139. WGNclean.com. WGNclean.com for Executive Green Carpet Cleaning. Just wanted to answer a couple of quick texts before we move on. I was talking about our special programming on WGN-TV on Thanksgiving morning, our annual broadcast of Bozo, Gar, and Ray, WGN-TV Classics, our two-hour look back at Bozo Circus, Ray Rayner, Garfield Goose. That'll be from 8 until 10 Thanksgiving morning. And then following that, two-hour special Bozo Circus, the 1960s, just focusing in on that one decade and the great Bob Bell and Ray Rayner, Don Sandberg, Ned Locke, you know, the original cast of the show. So that's going to be on. Somebody texted in, what time will that be on again? And that will be 8 until 10 for Bozo, Gar, and Ray. And that will be 10 until noon for Bozo Circus, the 1960s. Included in there will be Hard Rock, Coco and Joe, Susie Snowflake, and Frosty the Snowman. And somebody else texted in, we live in Michigan, and we don't get WGN. Is there a way to stream the Thanksgiving Day specials? From Marion in Michigan. P.S. Love you, Dean. Aw, Marion, love you too. Yes, they are going to be streaming. They will stream live at WGNTV.com/live. Or if you go to the WGN News app, you'll be able to watch it there as well. So that takes care of a little business with that. In the meantime, I want to move on. You know, we hear the stories all the time about how difficult it is for the restaurants all around the country, but here, you know, here in the Chicago area in particular, with all the new restrictions, and it is very difficult. And I'm not trying to pit one industry against another industry, but you know, I've said since the beginning of this, what about all the people in entertainment that have been out of work really since February, March? People in the movie theaters, the people who are, you know, behind the counters taking your tickets, the people making the popcorn and selling you candy and vacuuming the carpets, and the people up in the projection room. All those people have been basically out of work for all of this time. And now with these new Tier 3 restrictions that took effect last Friday, theaters are completely closed again. It started to reopen a little, and now it's closed again. How about those people who are also suffering? And how about the 71,000 people in the arts and entertainment and recreation sectors of Chicago, musicians, ticket takers, people who work behind the scenes, who build the sets? What about all of those people who normally bring you entertainment that they are out of work? These are the people who are going to be the beneficiaries of Chicago Independent Venue League and the Giving Back Fund to try to help some of these people during this very difficult time that they're all going through. I mean, we all just sort of have to roll up our sleeves and try to help each other during this difficult time. Matt Woodburn is the co-owner of the Chop Shop in Chicago and is also Civilization Music Series producer. Matt, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. How are you doing today?
Thank you. Great. Thank you for the time.
Have I kind of stated the situation as it exists properly? Is there anything that you would take out or add?
You nailed it. You nailed it. So as you said, you know, there's over 70,000 people that work behind the scenes in the entertainment industry here in Chicago that are at risk of losing their jobs due to this pandemic. So you nailed it.
And you know, and the musicians as well. I mean, it's all the people behind the scenes, but you know, except for a handful of musicians that are multi-bazillionaires, there are a lot of people who you know, they play a little jazz at a steakhouse. They, you know, do a little gig here, a little gig there. And, you know, those guys, you know, those men and women are all out of work as well. So what is this emergency? What is the Civil Save Emergency Relief Fund? What is that that you're trying to raise money for?
So as the name implies, the SAVE Fund stands for Staff, Artist, and Venue Emergency Relief Fund. So during this dark time, Civil, the Chicago Independent Venue League, has put together this fund for people to, you know, help out in this dark time.
And in what way can people help out?
So two ways. So all of this information about the Civil Save Fund is on civilchicago.com, and that's C-I-V-L, chicago.com, just to get that clear. And all the information is there. And then what we're doing with the Civilization virtual concert series is offering a little entertainment during this dark time. So we're having independent artists play a handful of Chicago's most loved independently owned and operated venues. These are all Chicago homegrown acts. So we're putting together this concert series for people to be entertained and to get awareness of the Civil Save Fund, where people will be able to donate during the concert. And anytime, actually, at civilchicago.com.
Yeah, so this is these concerts are going to begin next Friday, November the 27th. And where can people see these?
At civilchicago.com. Again, it's T-I-V-L, chicago.com.
Okay.
So that'll be Friday night at 8 p.m.
And there's a long list of performers, more being added on all the time. The venues that are participating, a long list of very, very familiar venues that are allowing people to come in and do these performances and record them, I presume.
That's right.
So they can go up online and people can enjoy them.
That's right. That's right.
CivilChicago.com. Civil, C-I-V-L, Chicago.com to get more information. And Matt Woodburn, co-owner of the Chop Shop, which is one of the participating venues, and the music series producer. Appreciate you joining us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the time.
I've been doing real good. I just had a down month.
I got an interview tomorrow, Mom. Otherwise, I...
Oh, you know me. I always land on my feet.
Don't look at that. Come on. Come on. Don't you look at it. You look at me. You look at me.
You let her get away with this every time.
I told you that I would do better.
You always say that. You're lying.
I always try.
You got to think about these kids.
What do you think I've been thinking about since I was 18 years old, huh? Never had a life where I wasn't thinking about the kids.
The new movie is called Hillbilly Elegy.
Do you actually want to be dead?
It is an adaptation of the novel by J.D. Vance, minus some of the political tones of the actual novel. Director Ron Howard has taken the story of an Appalachian family and to put it up on the big screen, the story of the child in the family who grows up, is going to law school and is pulled back into his Appalachian culture when an illness in the family takes place, an illness having to do with addiction and dysfunction. It's a very interesting movie and beautifully performed by Glenn Close and Amy Adams, among others, in this movie. And we will hear from Amy Adams and Glenn Close in a moment. And I also talked to Ron Howard one-on-one on a Zoom call earlier this week, in which we talked about the movie and his daughter, Bryce Dallas Howard, who is now directing. And, of course, you know that I had to bring up Happy Days as Richie Cunningham and The Andy Griffith Show as Little Opie. That's actually where I started our interview. Ron, it's good to see you. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. I'm well.
Good. I'm feeling very nostalgic about you. Yesterday, I turned on the television
Andy Griffith was on, and you were singing Tootsie Goodbye with Aunt Bee
at the piano. Yeah.
Do you remember that? I mean,
I do.
Do you have fond memories?
I have a lot of fond memories. And of course, you know, Frances Bavier was not from the South. She was a theater actress from New York. And so, in fact, you know, she could play that song. And she was having a great time that day, getting a chance to play and sing.
Yeah, those are fun episodes, but also feeling nostalgic for the Happy Days reunion that you guys did virtually online. So great to see all of you together, and for a cause you all believe in.
Everybody's still close, and that was a great experience.
So, you know, your movie Hillbilly Elegy opened in Chicago in theaters last week. Mm-hmm. This coming Friday, theaters are going to close here because of the COVID-19 numbers. What kind of an effect do you think this will have, not only on your movie, but on movies in general, with theaters continuing to close around America?
Well, look, it's particularly tough on that aspect of the business. At the same time, streaming is booming, which means storytellers are going to get an opportunity to keep telling stories, and where everybody's out there trying to find ways to be safe and get it done. Netflix is not the only one out there, but they're bold. They're willing to take on challenges. Hillbilly Elegy is one of those. It's not the most obvious choice, and yet they fully supported it and supported my approach to it. And we had planned much more of a theatrical release, but I don't believe the theatrical experience is going to go away for all time. But I do think that, and I think audiences are going to define this for the medium. I think that if they go back to movie theaters, they'll be, you know, movie theaters will flourish. But I don't think movie theaters are going to are going to vanish. I think that that communal experience is very, very human and it's desirable.
Nothing like seeing a movie on a big screen, that's for sure. All we have to do is get rid of the virus, and we'll be in good shape. Yeah. When you take source material like this, like J.D. Vance's book, and adapt it, how did you look at this, and what were the decisions that you made in translating it to the big screen?
Well, it was a tentative process, because on the one hand, it was a popular book. I liked the book. It resonated with me. I was intrigued by the socio-political stuff that JD put forward. That aspect of it was interesting, but it wasn't what I thought the movie could be. When I started thinking of it as a movie, I looked at that family, this very complex family that was both culturally specific, helped you have some insight into kind of what that region had gone through, some of the economic trauma, some of the familial dysfunction and all that. But it also, I thought, reflected a kind of a common set of challenges that families face and individuals face. Everybody has to go through a period of time of recognizing the baggage that they carry from their family, from their people, understanding the strengths and weaknesses of that, and deciding what to do with that going forward. And I felt like that's a kind of universal story. And so I thought it was interesting in that it was culturally specific, but also very, very relatable. And I thought that was a potent combination for a family drama.
Yeah, good for you. I just have to say real quick, they're wrapping me, but you must be so proud of Bryce for the directing work that she's doing on The Mandalorian right now.
She's just killing it. And she's, you know, she also had a great documentary out this year called Dads.
Yep.
She's writing. She just finished Jurassic World. I'm very happy for her. Her family's flourishing. It's as a dad, it's great to see your kid, you know, having the life she wants to have.
There you go. There you go. Oh, Ronnie Howard, Opie, and Aunt B. Smashed Aunt B singing. Talking about Bryce Dallas Howard, Ron Howard's daughter, actress, and now director. She directed her own documentary called Dads, and has directed a couple of episodes of The Mandalorian at the same time. We continue with the stars of the new Netflix movie, Hillbilly Elegy. That's the name of Ron Howard's movie that he directed. The mother and grandmother in the movie are played by Academy Award nominees Amy Adams and Glenn Close, with the bigger-than-life performances in this very interesting story. We sat down and did a Zoom chat with them the other day as well.
A little bit about working with Ron. You've both worked with such amazing directors, and I just think he's fantastic. Do you agree?
I totally agree. It's the second time I've worked with him. I want to work with him again. I'll do anything he ever asks me to do. I think he's one of our great directors. And to think of his career, no one has had a career like Ron Howard in this country. And when you walk on a set with him, it's the second time I've done it, you know that he is absolutely prepared to be behind us, to help us reach the best performances that we can have. And he also has a great, great team of crew around him as well.
Yeah, Amy, do you? I saw you nodding your head there. I'm thinking you must agree all the way, huh?
100%. I've always wanted to work with Ron, and when this opportunity came up, I just said, like, he does not disappoint. He is such a wonderful, Glenn has put it this way, he's a humanist in the way that he approaches the work, the way that he approaches his crew, his cast, everyone around him. It just becomes an incredibly supportive environment, which allows you to feel really brave and like you can, it's very collaborative, and it just doesn't mean you don't get worked hard and pushed to the limits. It just means that it's fun and exciting.
Is there a little bit of geeking out in the fact that he's Opie from The Andy Griffith Show and Richie Cunningham from Happy Days also?
Just amazing. I had a great story of he couldn't dance in the Music Man, so they had to shoot him above his feet. He was only like 5 or something.
Yeah. I happened to flip on a rerun yesterday where he was singing Tootsie Goodbye with Aunt B yesterday. And I mentioned it to him, and he burst out laughing. He 100% remembered it.
And as long as he has in this industry and to have as much success as he's had and to still operate with such humanity and humility is a real inspiration.
Yeah.
Great family man, too.
Yeah. A great guy all the way around. And, you know, really walking such a delicate line with the story, as you say, creating these brave characters without making them too over the top and caricatures, really. I credit him, but boy, that's on both of you for this. Glenn, what was that process like for you?
Twofold. Number one, to get the look right, I didn't want to be distracted by my own face. And also to learn from the family about this larger than life woman that they loved so fiercely and to do her justice. So, you know, we started with the look. We had wonderful pictures of Mama, videos of Mama, and then with meeting the family, asking very specific questions about body language and how she smoked a cigarette. Now, she had a cigarette in her hand all the time. Sometimes two going at the same time. Those are just invaluable, beautiful nuggets for an actor to just, you know, assimilate and try to do justice to this person who made such a big difference in her family.
Yeah, I just saw, you know, both of these performances as such brave choices on both of your parts to go into such dark places with this. Amy, did that attract you at all to taking this on?
No, it actually detracted. I'd been sort of living in a dark place. I had done Sharp Objects. I had just done a film called Woman in the Window, which hasn't come out yet, but I did shoot that before this. And that was also a really sort of dark and challenging place. So I was actually looking to do something a little bit lighter. And when Ron presented me with this, I was a little hesitant. And yet when I had, when I talked to Ron and learned how he wanted to tell the story of this family and sort of the impact that telling this story could have on people, which I'm learning in speaking to people today, it's been really validating. And of course, getting to work with Glenn and everybody else. So Bev was a character that was challenging and also very rewarding to play. Yeah.
Glenn, I happened to notice while I was waiting actually to talk to you that yesterday was the 26th anniversary of the opening of Sunset Boulevard on Broadway. I don't know if you're aware of that, but I mean that's got to be one of the milestones of your life, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. So it's actually probably 27 because we opened first in L.A.
Oh.
Yeah, that character has had a huge impact on me as an artist.
Yeah, an amazing role, as are these. Thank you so much for the movie, for the chat. It's good to see you both. I hope you both have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thanks to you both.
You too. Thank you.
The Glenn Close, Amy Adams, they are the stars of the new Netflix movie, Hillbilly Elegy, which will drop on Netflix this coming Tuesday, just in time for Thanksgiving. There are a lot of powerful movies that are out there right now. One of them I reviewed on television this past Friday stars the great Sophia Loren at 86 years old, her first movie in like 10 years, something like that, and she is spectacular in it. Powerful story of she is a Italian-Jewish Holocaust survivor who takes in children of prostitutes and has a confrontational and ultimately special relationship with one of the children. It's a great movie that I cannot recommend enough to you. There's a lot to see this weekend. Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something of me? Eat it, eat it. Just eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it. Free Thanksgiving food time. Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show, the original All Things Edible program, heard every Sunday. This week we're doing it a little on the early side. And we did it with the Butterball Turkey Talk Line last week. And once again this week, Bill Nolan, supervisor with the Butterball Turkey Talk Line, joining us again because we have kind of short segments this year. Bill, welcome back. Nice to have you.
Good morning, Dean. Thanks for having me.
So this year, I mean, the Butterball Turkey Talk Line folks are still there to answer your questions on the phone, online. You're all at your individual homes, though, instead of at the Butterball Central, where you normally answer the phone lines. But still dishing out that good information, just like always. How many years now for the Butterball Turkey Talk Line?
Yeah, we've been in existence. This is our 39th year, believe it or not. You know, it kind of snuck up on us. And 39 years we've been at it. We've added, you know, different ways for folks to get a hold of us and kind of changing with the times. And you're right, we've gone remote this year. All of our experts, including myself, we're in our own homes and we're taking calls and answering texts and helping customers out right from our houses. So, so far, so good.
Yeah, so let's get right into the questions here because we already have people both on our text line and on our phone line. 312-981-7200 is your Uncle Dean hotline. 312-981-7200. Laura, you're going to be up first this week. Hi, you're on WGN.
Hi, first I'd like to say I love your product, love Butterball. This year is a little different cooking-wise for us because the oven that we had is not working, and we are going to get it on a Black Friday sale.
Oh,
okay. I did buy a new Nesco roaster. It seems in the past, my old Nescos seem to dry things out. So I'm wondering if there's a better way in a Nesco to make it, if it should be in a bag, if it shouldn't be a different temperature. What would you suggest?
What's your recommendation there, Bill?
Yeah, Laura, thanks for the question and the kind words about Butterball. You know, the Nesco is a great product to use, and we've tested it in a lot of different ways in our kitchen. You know, it's going to create a little bit more of a steamed product than a regular roasted product because of the close confines of the lid on it. But the best way to not have it dry out is just try to monitor that internal temperature as much as you possibly can. You know, we get a lot of questions on people saying, you know, can we, you know, how do we prevent it from drying out? And really not letting it go above that 170 degrees in the breast and 180 in the thigh is the best way to ensure that it'll be moist. But if you follow those directions, you're going to have a better chance of having it as moist and juicy as possible.
Wouldn't putting it in a bag keep it a little more on the moist side too?
You can put it in a bag, and you the bag will, though, it'll prevent it from, the only downside of that, it'll prevent it from browning at all. You know, you're not going to, you're going to have more of a pale, a pale appearance to it. But, yeah, you can put it in a bag, and it will help the moisture a little bit.
Okay, but.
Would you suggest 325 still?
Yeah, in the Nesco roaster, I believe we recommend 350 degrees in the Nesco. So that's going to be a different temperature than in the than the conventional cooking with the regular oven at 325.
So 350 in the Nesco, and instant read thermometer, is that the best thing to do and just keep checking on it to see where it is?
Exactly. Instant read is the best because it's going to take it the fastest. And better yet, even if you have a probe thermometer with a cord, you could stick that in it and have, you know, have it feed through the lid at the bottom of the lid, and you don't have to take that lid off. But, you know, I wouldn't check it for about maybe two-thirds of the way through before you pull that lid off and check it the first time. And if you're still a ways off on the internal temperature, you know, try not to lift it off every 5 minutes or so because you're losing a lot of heat. Yeah. But if you keep an eye on it, again, I think you'll have a better. And, you know, as Dean said, I think the bag is a good way to go, too. Just keep in mind you won't have the same appearance with the top of it being brown.
Yeah, plus you want that nice crusty skin anyway.
Right.
How long should that be in? What's the formula for number of minutes per pound, Bill?
Yeah, we don't go by minutes per pound on our turkeys. You know, for most of our turkeys, we go with a recommended per weight and how many hours it's going to be, and we go by weight range. So, in other words, we would say, you know, a 10 to 18 pound turkey, which sounds like a wide range, but this is how it works best in our test kitchens. A 10 to 8 pound turkey in a conventional oven is going to take about 3 to 3.5 hours to cook. Now, in the Nesco, I think, and I try to remember everything that we have as far as times, but I don't have the exact time on the Nesco. But I'll tell you what, the Butterball Turkey Talk Line is open today, and if you want to give them a call at 1-800-BUTTERBALL, they can give you the exact time on the Nesco, what they recommend for the size turkey that you have.
Yeah, they can look it up. Good luck with that. A texter writes, Dean, we've never cooked a turkey breast by ourselves before. Can you help? A lot of people are doing the turkey breast this year because it's going to be smaller gatherings. Any difference in doing a breast versus a whole turkey?
No, you know, it's really the same concept. You know, it's the same temperature. You're going to go with 325 degrees. You're going to want to go ahead and brush that like you would with the turkey with a little bit of vegetable oil on the top and season it, if you'd like, with salt and pepper. And you're going to want to place it on a skin side up, of course, on a flat rack inside of a pan that's about 2 to 3 inches deep to catch juices that come off of that. But the breast times and temperatures on that, I've got my breast temperatures. Yeah, the 3 to 5.5 pound breast is going to take about 1.5 to 2.25 hours to cook at that 325 degree oven. And a larger breast at 5.5 to 9 pounds is going to be about 2.25 to 2.75 hours unstuffed. Now, keep in mind, you do want to check that temperature of 170 degrees is what your goal is to reach for the internal breast temperature before you pull it out.
Okay. Yeah, as we speak right now, Bill, I have a turkey breast, Butterball turkey breast, as a matter of fact, that is brining at my house right now in buttermilk. I saw a recipe in the New York Times for a buttermilk brined turkey breast. It's buttermilk. It's a couple of cups of buttermilk, a couple of tablespoons of salt in a plastic bag, and it's in my fridge right now, and I'm going to cook that up tomorrow morning.
Oh, I would love to hear how that turns out, because I know you mentioned last week on the show when we were on, and you mentioned it. So I looked it up, and in fact, I looked it up this morning, and I found the recipe, and I think it sounds amazing.
Sounds good.
I have to hear how that's going to turn out.
I'm really curious. I'm doing it on live TV tomorrow, so we'll see what.
I will definitely tune in.
We'll see what. It'll either be fantastic or a fantastic disaster, which I know that you guys have heard some great disasters. Disaster stories through the years at the Butterball Turkey Talk line as well, right?
Oh yeah, we've had disasters, you know, and we've had disasters and we've had moments of panic, you know. There's a lot of panic and a lot of stress around the holidays, and people will, you know, they get to a point where we try to save the day is what we do. You know, people will call up and say, oh my gosh, you know, the biggest disaster in the making is that the turkey is frozen on Thanksgiving morning.
Right, yeah.
And they don't know what they're going to do. And, you know, one thing that we like to tell folks, if they do forget to thaw it, you know, it doesn't have to be a disaster. You can actually cook it from frozen if you'd like. It's just going to take you longer, you know. So that's, you know, that's about 50% longer. So that's something to keep in mind if it's still totally frozen. But again, another way is to thaw it out using the cold water method. I think we talked about a little bit before.
Yeah, that's
where that expedites the process.
Yeah, that, I mean, if you're just buying your turkey today, you're definitely going to have to do the cold water method probably. And that's available at butterball.com, or you can call 1-800-BUTTERBALL to get the information. Bill Nolan, supervisor with the Butterball Turkey Talk Line. We'll get to more of your questions in a minute. 312-981-7200.
Our pricing philosophy is real simple.
Ben and Arvid Huth, brothers and owners of Penny Mustard Furnishings.
It's the everyday lowest possible price that we can sell it at in order to pay our bills, deliver it into the home, keep our lights on, and be here tomorrow to serve you again.
Here is the price. It's a fair price. It's an honest price. And I think the basis behind that whole philosophy is one can be summed up in one word, fairness.
We believe from the pricing philosophy standpoint is this is how I would want to be treated. And how I want to be treated is I want to know that tomorrow, if somebody comes into my store, they're not getting a different price than I got today. That isn't fair to the one that bought today. With our pricing philosophy, you can buy with confidence today, tomorrow, next month. That nobody is getting a better price because of a moon sale or a birthday sale or whatever. We have our lowest price up front every single day.
PennyMustard.com.
2020 has taught us to make room in our lives for what matters most.
Which is?
People. We're making more room for people. Less room for junk.
I'm certainly doing that.
How so?
When I watched our truck team haul away a bunch of my junk last week, I've never felt more free.
Less junk? More happiness.
Less junk. More happiness.
1-800-GOT-JUNK is full service junk removal.
We make junk disappear.
All you have to do is point.
Call me at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
Or visit me at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
This week on Chicago's Best, it's getting cold outside. What better way to warm up than with some home-style cooking? It's Chicago's Best Comfort Food to Go, Sunday night at 10:30 on WGN-TV.
All right. With the cold temperatures, you're going to be inside more often now. Got to get those rugs, carpets, upholstery all cleaned of virus and bacteria. Very important to professionally sanitize your carpeting, rugs, floors, and furniture. Executive Green Carpet Cleaning is a family of dedicated carpet cleaners taking every measure to ensure the health and safety of your family. Executive Green provides a level of clean that no one else can deliver. They scrub and extract using the world's most powerful carpet cleaning machines and their own ultra-purified deionized water. They scrub and groom your carpets and leave a nice, even-looking finish. The schedule is filling up for the holidays, so call right now. Kelly or Caroline are the only two people that will ever answer the phone. 630-990-8600, 630-990-8600, or book online at WGNClean.com. Three rooms, sparkling, $139. WGNClean.com. wgncleaning.com. That's wgncleaning.com for Executive Green Carpet Cleaning. A couple of minutes left to get your questions in for Bill Nolan, supervisor at the Butterball Turkey Talk Line. So, Bill, one of the things that I cooked on TV this past week, I've been trying to come up with some alternatives for smaller gatherings, you know, because people are not having huge family gatherings this year. I took some turkey cutlets, and I made some stuffing, you know, some dressing on the side. However you make your favorite stuffing. I did the stuffing. Then I took some turkey cutlets, spread them out, and I put a pretty generous dollop of stuffing in the middle of the cutlet and rolled it up almost like a burrito. And I baked it.
I put a
whole tray of these stuffed cutlets, put some gravy on it, a little paprika, put it in the oven, and they come out like little turkey stuffing burritos. They were so good.
That's a great idea. I really like that a lot. And you get it all in one bite. You got your turkey, you got your stuffing, your gravy. Yep. Gravy's on top. It's perfect.
I almost was going to put a layer of cranberry sauce in it just to, you know, really complete the trilogy. Here's a text for you, Bill, that says, Dean, I like to use my grill for baking our turkey. And I got to say, best turkey I ever made was on my grill. You know, it gets, you know, kind of smoky and it's delicious and moist. It's fantastic. But this caller says that she likes to use the grill, but my family loves gravy. Foil pans are not good for making gravy. Can I use a regular roasting pan in my grill? What's your opinion on that?
Well, you can, but, you know, keep in mind, you're not probably going to want to use it inside too much anymore. I mean, with the heat, I don't know if you have a charcoal grill or a gas grill, but regardless, you know, it's going to get kind of, it should be able to take the heat, I think. But I would get something that maybe isn't the real nice that you want to keep in the house and use again.
Why wouldn't you be able to make gravy in an aluminum pan?
You could make it in an aluminum pan. And the other thing, too, is, you know, I like to do, when I do my turkeys on the grill, you know, I do it I'm a charcoal guy, and I do it indirect. I put the aluminum pan underneath the turkey, below the grate, and it catches all the juices. And you can just make the gravy with that. That works out real well.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, that you put the pan underneath so the turkey drippings fall into that. Take the aluminum pan out after that, and you can make your gravy from there. Even if you take the drippings and just put them in a regular, saucepan on the grill, you don't have to make it in the aluminum pan, but you want to collect it in there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, and what I do also before I ever make my gravy is I take my drippings, whether I do it from the grill pan or whether I do it inside, and I pour it into a beaker, basically, and I let everything settle, you know, and I pour off a lot of the oil, and I don't use a lot of the fat.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that, to your point, then you could just take your drippings in your foil pan, pour it off, let it settle, pour off your excess fat, and then you've got those delicious drippings to make the gravy from.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're out of time again, but you can call the Butterball Turkey Talk Line, right? You can go online. Give us all the ways if we still have questions.
Sure. Still have questions. We are open today, as a matter of fact, and that number is 1-800-BUTTERBALL, which is 800-288-8372. You can text us your questions at 844-877-3456. Visit our website at butterball.com for how-to videos and calculators. You can also email us through the website. You can live chat us through the website. And finally, if you have an Echo device with Alexa, you can enable the Butterball skill and ask your questions right through Alexa and get your answers there.
How about that? That's cool. That's a cool new development.
It's cool.
We literally have 1 minute here before we have to go to the NFL. If you can, in less than 60 seconds, turkey breast in a crock pot, somebody is asking about. Is that possible?
Turkey breast in a crock pot. It is possible. You can do it in a crock pot. What you want to do, it'll fit in about a 6-pound turkey breast in a crock pot. So what you want to do, half a cup of water on the bottom of the crock pot, top side of the breast up. You can cook it on high for 6 hours. Or till the internal temperature of the breast reaches 170 degrees. So if you have a crock pot that it'll fit in, that will work just fine. Just follow those directions. Have a cup of liquid or water. You could use stock if you want to.
I was going
to
say some nice broth. Yeah. Any vegetables, anything like that should go in there at all?
Yeah, you know, I always like to throw aromatics in or any kind of onions. You could do some fresh herbs if you want to. Yeah. You know, I think the recipe or the formula I gave is just the bare essentials. But yeah, jazz it up a little bit. You know, onions, whatever you want. Carrots are great. Whatever you want to put in.
There you go. It looks like you're getting calls already there, Bill. Bill Nolan, supervisor of the Butterball Turkey Talk Line. Always good to talk to you. Happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
Thank you, Dean. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. All right, that's going to wind it up for us today. We'll see you tomorrow morning on the WGN TV Morning News between 8 and 8:30 on Bob Sir.